What's up, guys? Welcome to this episode of the Friday Pod. This was another absolute cracker. A little bit slow to start. We had a technical problem with Mark at the very beginning. But if you get through the first 20 minutes of this one, it gets better and better and better. And right at the very end, there's a hilarious joke that had us all cracking up that you'll love. But it's also a very powerful lesson. Trust me, this is an absolute ripper. So do stick around. Just keep going. Even if you play the first 20 minutes on high speed, get through because it's a ripper. It's going to get you guys really, really rethinking whether you are doing things right out there or not. If you haven't already subscribed to the channel, make sure that you do. A lot of people think they're subscribed, but they're not. And if you want to be notified when a new pod drops, make sure you hit the notification bell as well. So make sure you subscribe, get involved in the comments. Thanks for all the support. Bye for now. What's up, guys? Welcome to the Friday Pod. How are the boys today? What is happening? Marky Mark, how's it going?
Oh, mate, I'm doing well. Bitcoin all-time highs back in Byron Bay and the sun's shining. Can't complain. What about you boys?
Eric, what's happening?
Yeah, good. Very good. Settling on a property today, actually, when this is going to be released, which is pretty cool, James and I, which is exciting that we've been working on for quite some time. So just going through all the settlement figures today prior to the pod. And yeah, just good, man. Gold Coast, beautiful weather. And yeah, enjoying that we get to do this Friday pod together every week. So,
much the same. Just sitting here, and I work from home. For those who don't know, I'm looking straight across the point of Burley and watching its whale season now. So you're seeing this constant art show of this whale slapping and carrying on all the time. So it's worst of places in the world. So yeah, and like Eric said, we've got a property settling, and DA went in early last week. So yeah, things are moving along there, which will be good.
Fantastic. Yeah. So let's get into it, guys, because we are at a bit of a time frame this morning because we have the summit kicking off. We record these on Tuesday. They get released on Friday. And of course, the summit kicks off in a few hours, Freedom Summit. On that, I just want to, you know, just for all the listeners, just express a massive thank you. I think we're up to about $320,000 donated to the John Fawcett Foundation, and I've been getting emails from Indonesia, the management over there, and their office in Perth, and they are absolutely blown away. It's about a third of the annual budget raised in 2 weeks of promoting this freedom event, the largest single donation in the 36-year history of the charity. So a massive thank you to all the people behind the scenes that are helping making it happen, and of course our valued listeners and my followers on Instagram. So thank you very much. We start in a few hours and it's going to be an epic event.
Adam, thank you to you too on behalf of all of us and I'm sure everyone listening, you know, that we've seen how much you've had to do to get this event organized, which has been nothing short of amazing. And then now over the next 3 days, you're going to have to sit there and interview like five or six guests a night, back to back to back to back. So it's going to be no mean feat, and I couldn't think of anyone better to kind of bring out the best of the people that you're interviewing and to hear their stories and their strategies on how we can live a life of more freedom. So thank you to you too, mate.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Thank you for that. Yeah, we've got 9 speakers, 8 different countries, and a fun fact is only 3 of them don't live in tax havens. The rest of them live in tax havens, which is kind of speaks a little bit to my network these days. It's just people who are really optimizing for wealth, which is interesting.
So just for context of people, you know, if you're in the marketing world with your business, running an online event and you get 100 people show up, 200 people show up, it's pretty amazing. This is actually just doing the back envelope math. 610 people that are self-selected and paid $500 to come. This is not just a red show, you get a 30% show up rate. So and this is all pretty much from your social profile, correct? So personal brand.
Yeah, a lot of it. Yeah, the personal brand really, like the Instagram really came through, which is incredible. It's been a really interesting experience. And look, you're right, James. Like we were originally talking about doing a Freedom Summit in live, but in person. But we realized that the online event made it possible for more people to come by doing it 6 to 9 p.m. Sydney time. It made it more accessible. It made it more affordable because we didn't have to do an event and we wanted to raise a meaningful amount for charity. So just shows you, you know, the power of, you know, investing in social media. Like somebody said to me, man, you got such an amazing distribution channel there to be able to raise 300 grand. I said, yeah, look, you know, it's just 10 years of work, you know, of daily answering DMs and building that personal brand. Or about 8 years, I've got 70,000 followers, but they're real followers, they're real people. And so it does pay off, and it's the one thing that gives me so much joy out of that little area of my life. But in the interest of keeping it moving, let's move on. Mark, are you on audio, or have we just lost you on video? Okay, Mark's gonna have to log in and come back. So he's locked out. So I was going to jump into the all-time high with Bitcoin, but I think we'll wait for Mark to jump back in before we jump on that. Obviously, there's a lot of celebrating happening around. What I thought we might do is start with this leaked Treasury document that went to the ABC this week. And it was quite interesting seeing this, especially on the ABC. I'll just play it quickly and we'll edit it in post just so we can hear it. And then we'll just comment on it because it's quite fascinating for context. What this is a document between Treasury and the government, and usually it's heavily redacted and the media doesn't see all the details of these Treasury reports. They're meant usually just directly to the government. This particular one was leaked to the ABC, not fully redacted, and what it revealed was quite interesting. So let's just play this quick news article and then we'll talk about it.
Internal Treasury briefing notes accidentally shared with the ABC revealed the Albanese government has been warned higher taxes and spending cuts will be needed to fix the budget. These documents offer a rare insight into Treasury's frank advice, including that the government's signature housing goal is unachievable. Now they reveal Treasury has also modelled a worst-case scenario for the Australian economy based on global uncertainty spilling from the US. Political reporter Tom Crowley has been going through the documents and joins us now from Canberra. Tom, what do these documents reveal about the government's agenda?
Well, in one sense, Gemma, they tell us things that we already knew and have heard from experts about the government's housing policies and the state of the federal budget. What's different, though, now is that we know the government's own advisers at the Treasury are saying exactly the same things that we're hearing from many of the experts in public. This comes from Treasury's incoming government brief. It's a brief that the whole public service prepares for their new ministers during each election campaign. There's one for Labor, one for the Coalition. This is the Labor briefing. And as you mentioned there, details were accidentally emailed to the ABC. These documents are normally heavily redacted when they're requested under Freedom of Information laws. And that was the case here, except for a table of contents left in, which gave us a rare glimpse into some of the franker things that Treasury said to Treasurer Jim Chalmers. On housing, it was that your 1.2 million homes target will not be met. That's really the signature framing device for Labor's housing policy. They're talking all about building supply, and Treasury had some ideas about how they might work better with states and territories to get more homes built, use the migration system and the skills system to get more construction workers to build those homes. But that overarching piece of advice was that this signature target is not going to be met. We knew that it wasn't on track, but to hear it in such blunt terms will put some pressure on Labor to explain what more they're going to do on the housing supply front. When it comes to the budget, Labor talks all the time about budget sustainability, and Jim Chalmers has been talking in recent weeks about an appetite for tax reform. Well, Treasury says if you are to fix the budget, you need both spending cuts and higher taxes. The headings don't reveal exactly what Treasury said, but they do suggest Treasury pointed in the direction of superannuation tax and indirect taxes, a category that includes the GST, something Jim Chalmers hasn't been too keen to touch. But that's another one of the things that Treasury, in its frank advice, has suggested he might wish to look at in the indirect tax space.
And Tom, these documents, they also reveal that Treasury has been modelling a variety of global economic scenarios, including a US dollar crisis. What details do we have on that?
Well, we would
expect... So look, guys, in essence, basically the Treasury report said that the chances of this 1.2 million houses being built that have, you know, was a key promise of the government going into the election. They said it is simply not going to happen and not even close to going to happen. And the only way to dig out of the hole that the country is in is increased taxes. And, Are you guys surprised by any of this?
Jameson?
When you after we've had Andy Chimlow, who we'll talk to, about later in the pod, and then Jed Hansen on, no, not at all, after listening to those guys, and we haven't released any of those pods, so it becomes a zero surprise, specifically Eric and I, because we're in those pods, but not at all, and it's highly expected.
Yeah, 1.2 million houses, and this is the Treasury just going, it's not even close to being in the ballpark. And it's just, again, showing that the high level, is gaslighting the right term or lying the right term, that they thought that they could pull this off, Eric? I mean, you're in construction. It's just ridiculous how far out of reality that was.
It's basic numbers, right? We can all say what we want to say, but it doesn't mean it's actually going to get done. And me personally, I knew that was never going to happen, right? And that is why I'm very bullish on property, because when there's demand and the person that is supplying the housing with promises aren't going to be supplying enough, right? What is that going to do, right? You got a supply and demand issue, and that's basic. Right, basically what's happening, and that's why it's pushing property prices up. Like, property prices are steadily going up, and the reality is most people aren't going to be able to afford these properties. Now, obviously, 1.2 million properties to be built is a lot of taxes to be paid, right? There's a lot of stamp duties. There's a lot of, you know, different types of taxes within a new property. And if they're not building those, where is that tax going to come from? The tax has to come from somewhere. And of course, it's going to come from us, right? It's going to come from the everyday Australian. That's what's been happening this whole time. And then they put little rebates. Like, I had an electricity bill come in, and you know how you get an Origin text message and it says, hey, your electricity bill's come in and this is the amount if you want to pay for it. And then I got an actual bill in my email, and there was a difference of $75, and there's a $75 tax, government rebate, something, right? So like, that's the win, right? Like, yes, I've just got $75 off my electricity bill, even though my electricity is up by 50%, you know? So they make you feel like you got a little win out of it, but then they're going to just increase taxes left, right, and center, which is happening. So there's multiple ways to skin a cat, as they say. And in my opinion, they were never, ever going to be able to build 1.2 million houses. And one of the biggest reasons is why is because we don't have the labor to do so. And in my opinion, we're going to lose even more labor with these Olympics coming up, right? Because I heard someone say online that, and it made a lot of sense, that the Olympics is a deadline, right? So they can't move it. If the Olympics are set for, you know, 2032, and that's the date, they've got no choice but to build and do everything they can to get to that date, right? Where when you're trying to build 1.2 million houses, or you're building a house or whatever you're doing, you've got leeway, right? Like, it's not a solid date. Like, the Olympics is a solid date. So what are they going to do? They're going to incentivize workers to come and work for the government, and the government will pay them whatever needs to be paid to get the job done. What's that going to do to the construction sector, right? And this person was like, you know, construction costs are going to increase heavily, right, over the next 5 to 7 years. And I see that, like, I see it now, because we're building and we're developing, like, the costs of things are astronomical. So in my opinion, taxes will keep increasing, because there's no way we will build what's needed to be built. And in my opinion, what does that do with supply, lack of supply, if there's still demand, which there is demand, if immigration, like, the only thing I can see them maybe doing is pulling the pin a little bit on immigration to try and ease the pain of property prices going up. But again, it's you're contradicting yourself at the same time, because you need the labor, so you need the immigration, but we don't have the place for the people to actually stay, because you need them to be built. So it's a interesting situation.
I think we actually pulled on this thread some time ago about immigration and construction, And the amount of actual skilled labor that's coming in the construction sector itself won't make a dent in it. They're not all coming in as chippies. They're not all coming in as brickies. They're not all coming in as roofers or tiles or plumbers or whatever. So that whole fallacy of, oh, we needed the labor to build the house is bullshit as well. So it's just not going to happen. I mean, you know, that vacuum you're talking about, Eric, is probably more specific to Southeast Queensland, which is the highest net migration state possible. So, I mean, it's going to get pretty spicy here, that's for sure.
It's now that Brisbane, in last week, they announced it's become the most expensive to construct in the country is Brisbane. I interviewed John Alexander last week. The pod's not out yet, but John Alexander, very, very well-respected Australian, Order of Australia winner, professional tennis player, commentator on Channel 9 and 7. And he shared a stat with me about immigration that stopped me in my tracks. And he said, Adam, how many immigrants come into Australia last year? And I said, I know. He said, 600,000. I said, okay, that sounds like a lot, right? And he goes, to put it in perspective, how many immigrants do you think go into America each year, right? Do you guys know this number?
No.
Okay. Like 3 million or something?
1.1. So, wow. Yeah, so Australia takes in nearly over half the amount that the US takes in, and we're 13 times smaller. And you think about all the upheaval and all the stuff going on in America around immigration, and Australians are flooding 600,000 a year in. It's just incredible. So anyway, it's very interesting. And when I see that report on, we'll get Jerome to cut it in so we can see it, but when you see that report coming out of the ABC and showing what was leaked to Chalmers and co, Australians should be just outraged that you know, if they're not already outraged, they voted them back in, but they've voted these guys in with this promise, which is the number one, I think, for Australians, the number one issue is housing affordability, and they came out with this promise, which the Treasury's just going, nah, complete bullshit, it's not going to happen. And, and it was, as you said, Eric, it's so obvious that it wasn't going to happen, but unfortunately, the public just love a headline, and you know, we're going to build 1.2 million homes, and it turns out to be bullshit. Well, too bad, you voted us in now, and that's it.
Like, so, you got to think about what 1.2 million homes actually is, right? I haven't done math, but you divide that out by how many homes you needed per week to be done, right? Times the amount of people that you need to build those homes. Like, it doesn't take a rocket science, like right? Elon Musk. You don't need to be Elon Musk, you know, to understand this.
It's not just the homes, it's all the infrastructure, it's everything else. That building Adelaide. You're just going to build Adelaide. Come on.
And the thing is with government, right? Like the way I look at government work, right? It's different. Like every time I drive down Burley in the Gold Coast Highway here, because they're building the tram, right, from Surfers from Broadbeach to Burley, the amount of labor that are working on these lines, right? Like every so often I drive by and there's literally 12 people watching what two people are doing, and this I just go. It's so not efficient, right? And then I'm like, this is going to be the exact same thing that's going to be needed for the Olympics. Like they're talking about like the stadiums they're building and the transport and the trains. And I'm like, it's 7 years away.
Not only that, I mean, these guys, they obviously tender it out, get a company contract, and they're not all government employees, obviously, all laborers and whatnot. But they just fuck have a field day with the bloat they can put into these contracts. I used to years and years ago work in the concrete game when I'm about 20, whatever it was. And to put a new, just an example, they put a walk path from Burley here to every day to North Burley. It's 2Ks. I mean, I used to work with a bunch of Croatians. We would have had that done in a week and a half. No shit. Like that concrete would have been done, finished the lot. Yes, some lamps and electricians come in. It was over a year. And Eric said about how many people are working. No, how many people are watching is more to the point. Mm. They're just the bloat, which will suck out all the labor forces we just spoke about before for these fat contracts. And the contract that, you know, the subcontractors are just going, fantastic. We can just do overs and overs and overs and overs and overs because the government has to pay. They've got no choice.
I was at a barbecue on the weekend, friend's barbecue, and I was talking to a builder there. And we were talking about, you know, the cost of building and increases and this and that. He's like, I'm getting quotes, right, for, plumbers as an example to come in. They'll have a quote and then over and above, right? And they're like, $110 to $120 an hour. I'm like, they'll be paying the apprentice to come there to do the work and probably paying the apprentice, you know, $30 to $40 an hour if they're lucky. So you're talking three times, you know, 2.5 to 3 times. And some plumbers will be listening to this going, oh, screw you. That's what we deserve. That's fine. I'm not saying whether you deserve it or whether you don't deserve it. But the reality is it's all built into the price.
But that doesn't sound expensive, right? Like $100 to $120 an hour these days doesn't really sound that expensive.
Or it is when you're paying the bill.
For the qualified tradesmen, no. But I mean, the margins that are being built into these things, right? But they have no choice either because their costs are going through the roof, right?
But it's the whole inflation and the debt and the demographics problem, right? Like it's a vicious circle. Like I really, based on some of the prices that I'm paying for contractors in my e-commerce business, $120 an hour seems cheap as, mm-hmm. right? And you're building a fucking house, right? You're building the plumbing of a house, which is one of the most important things, right? So it doesn't seem that expensive when you take a holistic view of what the cost of everything is these days. This is the big problem, and this is the thing that I keep coming back to, right? I was a supporter of Trump in the election against Kamala Harris, and I've basically seen what they've done in the first 6 months, 7 months, and I'm like, it's just as bad as the last 4 or 5 administrations. Mm. The reality is these large macro forces, debt, demographics, trying to fill that gap with immigration, more debt, is a problem now that cannot be solved by left, by right, by either party, right? And so the reality is all these things are going to continue to go up in price.
When we had Topher Field on the pod, he mentioned one thing, and you guys are on the pod as well, so if I say it wrong, correct me. Mm-hmm. But he basically said the issue is that no one's talking about is the gap between the cost of what someone, right, is paid, right, to what that person can actually afford to buy in the market, right? Like that efficiency gap. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what he was mentioning.
Was it the cost of what they're paid versus the output they're able to provide the business?
I think there was two parts. It was productive dollar productive hours. Then yep. even though they get a wage increase, the taxes, it's not even bracket creep. It was just that the actual amount of disposable hasn't really changed for them.
So yeah,
their affordability is less. So dollar productive on one side for the employer. So they're getting
the amount that they can actually afford.
And the usable they can afford, the gap is widening on both of those paradigms.
Yeah, so, and you can see that, right? That's why you're saying $110 doesn't sound that bad, but $110 times 8 hours a day is $880 times 5 days a week. That's $4,500 a week. Like 5 years ago, if you're on $4,500 a week, you're high-fiving each other, right?
No, but that's the issue, right? You've got technology that's kind of creating this deflation, right? So the deflation means these businesses that are selling this product or the service aren't able to charge what they used to be able to charge for that service because technology is bringing the cost of everything down. Then you've got like trades which are building hard physical thing that the inflation is running rampant on because the cost of hard things is going up, right? So it's like, yeah, it's one of those things. Like I just feel like the way that we need to approach or not we, like as in the four of us, but like everybody listening, the way that we kind of need to approach it is to get inquisitive on how we can protect ourselves from it. Because the reality is that it's not changing neither party.
Yeah. Mm. I use the word efficiency a lot, right? Even with the builder that I'm using, and he's a good mate of mine, like, is this the most efficient way of doing this? Can we do it a better way? And I'm talking to a young guy at the moment, right, that I import a lot of material through. And he's got a large business now importing windows, doors, a lot of different building materials. He's like, my business is booming. I go, man, of course your business is booming because builders, developers are going to have no choice, right, but to start looking at doing things overseas to actually make a margin, because you can't do it locally anymore, right? Yeah. And that value arbitrage, once one person does it, once two people do it, three people do it, more and more people will jump on that bandwagon. And to me, that is one of the only ways, because labor is not coming down, right? We're not going to be like Dubai and import labor from India and Bangladesh and all these things and unsafe and the rest of it. That's not going to happen here. The only way that we can do it is be more efficient, right? In regards to the materials that we're bringing in. Like some of the cost savings I've had in this house has been unbelievable, right? Because I've been efficient. I thought a little bit outside of the box, but I've put a shit ton of work in to get that done. But if I were to do it locally, it just squeezes the margin out of doing it. And guess what? I just don't do it. And then what happens is, for everyone that says, I just won't do it, that's more housing that's not getting built, which is there's a lack of supply, which means what's going to happen to housing? It's going to keep going up. Like, that's just the reality. So I think people that are thinking, you know, in business and in construction, is that word efficiency, right, is something
in
that,
Australia, if you don't have that etched on the inside of your eyelids at night, like, it's all about those efficiencies and margins, or you're dead in the water. It's that simple.
It's the 1% that make a huge difference.
I mean, Eric and I are even in discussion now. I'm not going to shoot too far away from it. Just that's on the material side, but we're looking on the labor side now as well. Going, fuck, we can't hire. You know, we have to look at some other alternatives on the labor side, and then probably expose ourselves to a little bit more risk. But to make it work, to be able to compete with a builder who's got that up their sleeve. So. And then you, when everyone gets to that point, it's like, well, no, that's the new normal. Where else do you look for efficiencies? It's like there's not much left.
It's interesting to see where the free market will end with this, because this is basically an experiment. And I agree with Mark. Nothing stops this trend. Like, it's gotten away from us with the money printing, and that's the underlying problem. But let's move on from that. I want to talk quickly about the...
Adam, the underlying problem is demographics. Right. It's that people are living much longer than they used to, which is a great thing, longevity. But that means that they're becoming a strain on the system for much longer. And we're not replacing those. We're not having enough kids to, or we didn't have enough kids 20, 30 years ago to put into the workforce to be more productive. So, like, we could bash the central banks, and we could continue to bash the governments, but the reality is that all they're trying to do is fill a gap that is being left by demographics. And it's either fill the gap with more money printing and give everybody the opportunity to jump onto a life raft by buying assets, or we go into a global depression for the next 20, 30 years. So you choose your poison, right? And this is just the issue that I have with bashing government or bashing central banks. The reality is they're choosing the path of least resistance, so us, the citizens, can have a higher quality of life, right? But we're too busy fucking arguing with some dickhead in the comments to notice what's really going on and just take advantage of it, right? So it's kind of like a wake-up call.
It's funny, we're about to springboard into that interview with Andy Schimler, but one of his key takeaways and funniest pieces he said, he goes, Labor lives whatever, the two cheeks on the same ass, doesn't matter. it was a very entertaining pod. So with that, Adam, take it away.
Mark, is that your mic, Mark, just rubbing a little bit on your shirt maybe?
Sorry.
I think you might have to hold it a little bit. Yeah.
It keeps scratching it. Maybe it's that beard.
The Baron Bilzerian.
So I wasn't obviously on the pod with, I think it's Dr. Shumlow, isn't it? I'm not sure. But anyway,
yeah.
And so I've just been watching it this morning. I'm about halfway through it. And I love the guy's passion. I love a good South African, right? Like, he's got some fire and some passion. But at the expense of getting absolutely destroyed in the comments, myself personally, I need to call bullshit on a couple of things he said, and also previous guests who've come onto the pod. And he can comment if he likes. But it's a really great way to get clicks in Australia to say that the top four banks in Australia are the four most profitable banks in Australia. That is not true. If you go on to any...
In the world, they're not
even in the top 10. They are outside the top 10. Now, sure, they are high, but I just want to fact check. Now, I'm not defending the banks. I agree they're highly profitable. I'm just telling you, settle down, like calm the farm. There are much bigger, more profitable banks in the world. Australia's four banks are in the next 10 outside of it, which is still amazing given there's 190 countries in the world and we've only got 25 million people.
That's on a nominal basis, but isn't the calculation that people are using to get that soundbite either per capita or equity return?
Fine.
Percentage equity returns.
On a per capita basis, Mark, I've no issue with that. But honestly, they keep presenting it as if we've got 20 million people and we're the most profitable banks on a gross basis. We're not. Go ahead.
No, you
I was just saying, they do the same thing with Coles and Woolies. Most profitable in the world with only 25 million people. No, Coles and Woolies are 8. You know, there's much bigger, more profitable supermarket chains on a gross basis. Now, yes, they are hugely profitable and there is some price gouging and problems going on there. But I just wanted to set the facts straight because they keep doing this and there is something to be said for, you know, there's a lot of good people working in these institutions as well.
And the other side of that coin, and Mark will probably have more input on that, being macro Mark and understanding how a lot of these financial systems work. Wouldn't you rather profitable banks that don't go tipped up when there's a little bit of a fucking tremor in the economy versus some that's flimsy as and then they have a run on the bank and then everyone fucking loses everything?
Well, it depends. It depends where you're sitting, right? Like if you're one of the Australians that owns a home, one of the reasons your home is gone up so much in value is because we've got very profitable banks, right? But if you're this new millennial cohort that's coming through, that's like, tear the fucker down, burn it all down, you know, I'll always get people in the comments say, tax the rich, that'll fix equality. Yeah, it'll fix equality. It will. And it'll make everyone poorer at the same time. So it depends where you come from. But yes, I think in short, a good profitable banking system is healthy for your economy, right? Like, what do we want here?
I'm in Cyprus and people say to me all the time, oh, isn't Cyprus the place where they had a banking collapse in 2014 and didn't they take 40% off everybody, or Lebanon where they lost all the money? And I'm like, isn't Australia the place where they take 40% of your money every year? You can't win anywhere. So it depends where you sit, right? So there are parts of the world that would love strong banks. And I'm not saying, the hypocrisy though is that most of Australians own the banks in their super fund. They own banks, right? And a lot of their earnings are from banks. A lot of these people, the banks. I'm like, how did you get the money to buy your house? You know, the house that you bought for $600,000 is now $1.5 million. Where did you get the $600,000 from? Oh, from those banks. So shut the fuck up and say thank you. I'm not pro-banks, right? Like, I'm just saying, like, just let's not get outraged at this shit. Like, one thing I like that Shumlo said was, like, they've got us distracted with all this pronoun bullshit and all this hatred and pushing us to the edges that can distract us from the main game.
He said, and I agree, right? Like, coming from Canada to Australia, you know, Canada, I don't even know what's the population in Canada now, maybe, you know, 40 million people or something like that. You know, Australia, call it 25. And, you know, Australia is highly, highly monopolized compared to even Canada. We don't even call it the US because the US is just a different ballgame. There's no comparison when you know, but you can kind of compare Australia and Canada a lot more than you can the US. And the big thing with him, that Australia is highly monopolized. Like, you basically got, you know, Coles and Woolies, you got big four banks, and then you've got, you know, these types of things, and a lot of these big players, you know, are you know, structured paying taxes overseas, which means, you know, the little guys pay the tax, and very, very, very pro, you know, obviously the Australian you know, population, but at the same time very, very against the whole corporate. But I'm in both sides. Like, at the end of the day, we have to remember where we live, right? Like, yes, we pay for it, but we walk outside. You know, majority of the places that we live is safe. It's clean. You're breathing clean air. Like, you're paying for it. Don't get me wrong, right? And everyone's going to make their own decisions on where they want to go. But at the end of the day, what is the for some other corporate company to come into Australia to come and try and take on Wools and Coles? Why would they? Do you know what I mean? Like the market is like Costco's doing it.
Look at what happened with Masters. I mean, those guys were Australians. Like, look at all the money that was lost for shareholders at Masters who tried to take on the sausage kings, you know.
But when you really think of it, like, how crazy is it, right, that you go and you got to go, okay, I need to go get something for the house. I need to buy tools. I need to do, and basically Bunnings is your only option. Or you got Mitre 10 that's in a little plaza that parking is, like, I will never go into a Mitre 10. Like, never, you know, there's nothing about me that will walk into a Mitre 10. If I'm thinking, hey, I got to go get soil, I got to go do this, I got to do that, you go into Bunnings. But when you think about it, like, that's one of the biggest monopolies is Bunnings.
But Eric, you're not the hypocrite. You're not the hypocrite out there you're admitting that you would only go to Bunnings, but you're not in the same thread saying tax the rich and make big businesses pay more, right? And this is the problem we have. Everyone's out there going, oh, we want competition. Destroy the monopoly between Coles and Woolworths, but they're also saying tax businesses more and tax the rich more and make things more uncompetitive.
It's like what I said before about the $75 credit, right, that people are getting on their electricity bill as an example, right? They're just charging you $250 somewhere else for that $75 that you're not seeing, but you're seeing a line item on your Argent bill going, ooh, $75. Well done, government. Thank you very much. But what you're not seeing, right, is all the stuff that's already being built in. What you're not seeing is the extra taxes. What you're not seeing is, well, you know, the inflation. Like, I looked at my electricity bill and I was just like, fuck, man, this has gone up, right? Just pay it. But I'm like, I can tell it's gone up because I'm like, man, what electricity have I been using, man? It's freezing. You know, like, we're not ones to put on heaters in this country because we're from Canada originally, but I'm looking at it and going, holy shit. And the first thing that came to my mind is, like, this would impact people massively. And that's the thing. Like, when you know you're living in a first world country, right, and you have to worry about whether you turn on your AC or turn on the heater or, hey, make sure the lights are turned off, don't use too much water, that's when you know there's a problem. Right. Yeah, you should be able to wash your dishes and go and run your dishwasher 2-3 times a day if you want, run your kids a hot bath without worrying. But right now there's people out there not being able to do that. That's when you know there's a major issue.
And just on that, like, I'm not one to nickel and dime, I don't need to look at the bills, but there's a link to energy that's supposed to be the family friendly one came through as a notice saying, oh, you changed your energy tariffs. And it was from 18 cents a kilowatt hour to 25 cents a kilowatt hour. It's like a 28% increase. You talk about inflation at 6 and 7. Like, which basket are you looking at? That's fucking, call it around 30%. And I live at home on my own. I don't have a wife and 2 or 3 kids or whatever. I run the dryer at all. Imagine, like, that's a pretty big clip for a family. And power is everything. It, as Eric said, it's in society, that everything nothing happens without the power. But even in the family home, it's a fucking significant jump.
We just got to be careful, I guess, guys. You know, like, when you hear, like, I love hearing Shumlo talk because he's passionate and I can see his heart's in a good place. But you got to really think, you know, people are outraged, but where are we going to focus our energy, right? And it's not as simple as just saying, oh, yeah, let's just get the government to intervene and break up the two big supermarkets. And, like, you know, like, when government says we're here to help, I'm fucking wary.
Run. He mentions, you know, like, he really attacks. I mean, he's been all over the news and stuff like that, attacking, you know, these big corporates, PwC and these types of things about, you know, helping corporates and helping companies be, you know, more tax effective and this and that. I'm like, yeah, I want to be more tax effective. Like, of course, let's just pay more tax just because you want to be, you know, Robin Hood. Like, that's not the reality. And what I think people need to start realizing, I've said it before, is people aren't setting up businesses, right, just to go out and employ as many people as they want. Like, that's not the reality. People are setting up businesses to try and make more money or make a difference and solve a problem. Like, we're not there to be, you know, again, we're trying to be, the word I use is efficient, right? And that's why right now there's widespread layoffs happening. Intel, Microsoft, Meta, Chevron, BP, Nissan, right? They're all massive layoffs happening around the world, right? And they're talking about the reasoning behind it is restructuring and automation, right? Like reading between the lines, right? And I think you said a stat, Mark,
yeah,
off camera. That was unbelievable. So I think people need to start having a think about this.
Yeah, it's never occurred in history of capitalism that one of the largest companies on the planet, Facebook, Meta, has increased their market cap by $1.5 trillion over the last 3 years. And at the start of this year, they fired 5% of their workforce.
Yeah, that's what's coming, guys.
That's called efficiency. That's what that's called. That's called, you know, shareholders looking after the shareholders, right? Them making more profit. That is the reality. That is the game these guys are in.
Do you know what the scary part of it is? If you read between the lines and you dig deeper as to why they're doing it, it's not just profit. They fear that they're going to become obsolete. One of the biggest companies in the world is worried about becoming obsolete, and that's why they feel they have no choice but to fire workers in order to compete with someone else that's going to come in and take their spot, whether it be OpenAI or XAI.
Well, Mark, who would have thought that Google's business would be under threat? I mean, who here uses Google to search shit anymore? No one. We all use Grok or we use whatever. Like, they must be losing billions out of AI. And look, I had a discussion this week with somebody who paid for some time with me, right? And he said, I want your opinion on, this business that, I'm thinking of doing. I'm thinking of this option, which is, you know, basically somebody's got a scratchy mic, guys. Can we just, he said, I'm thinking of starting this e-com thing, or I'm thinking about maybe becoming a property advocate, right? And he said, I want your advice on which of these two things I should do. And I said, I don't think you should start a business. And it was like, for me, who spent my career coaching people on how to start businesses, to say that, I said, look, this is the same advice I would give family right now. 80% of small businesses in Australia are going to go broke within 5 years. Right, so you've got an 80% chance of failure, right? So I said that's the starting statistic. That's going to scare the absolute crap out of you. You know nothing about real estate. You know nothing about e-commerce. You've got no experience in either one of those things. I said my friend Mark, who's on the pod with me every week, he will teach you how to trade. And I think you are better off spending a year learning how to trade. Mark's, since he started 9th of July, for those of you not following the story, he's publicly said, I'm going to put $10,000. I'm talking about Mark, who's on the pod right now with us, $10,000 up, and I'm going to trade options on it, and I'm going to disclose all my trades. And he's started on July 9th. It's up 48.24% since he started on July 9th, and it's July 15th today. when I think about this, and I think this is now the world that we're living in, and I can name 3-4 other opportunities right now that do not involve trying to go into e-commerce, because I was at the forefront of Amazon and I saw what happened. In 2012, you can put anything up, but as competition came, efficiencies came, and it was just an absolute race to the bottom. And the person who won all the way through was Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos is now taking 51%, I think it is, on average, of third-party sellers' turnover. It's going to him. Turnover, not net profit. 51% is going to Jeff in storage fees, commissions, advertising. No wonder he's the richest guy in the world. And he doesn't give a shit about the sellers. I saw him when he did that, Origin rocket to the moon. He said, I want to thank all the Amazon employees for allowing this to happen. And I'm thinking, this motherfucker standing in front of a machine that burns hundreds of billions of fucking dollars of fuel just so he can fly this metal penis into the sky. And he thanked his employees that are on food stamps for fucking making it happen. And he made not one mention of thanking the third-party sellers, which represent 2/3 of the marketplace revenue. This is mum and dads like Mark, who invest all this money into capital and take this massive risk shipping stuff from China to his factories in America. He didn't even mention those people. He just mentioned the people he could most think about that he's fucked on his way to his billion. So it's,
it's that time of year again at Unemployable, where we're opening up our Unemployable business coaching program. It's over a 12-month period, And with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You could get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au/coaching and register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
This is the world we're moving into. But what was interesting is the guy I was coaching, he was like having like that real, what is that, you know, where the women are robots and they just start twitching out, right?
He was
just like, I'm talking to Adam and he's telling me not to start a business. He couldn't process the idea of, hang on, I shouldn't start a business. Like, it was so ingrained in his head to play life on hard mode that he just couldn't. I said, please just think about this for a minute. Right? Like, I just sold my e-com business and I had a fucking great product, right? And like a 1 in a million product, very hard. That e-com business is successful and is a good business. But you try to find another product like that that's got a patent, a moat, exclusive distribution, recurring revenue. Go, good luck. Go try to find that.
On top of that, and also have 30 years in that the coalface has been a gun marketer as well.
Right.
So you
right.
can have all that and you're a shit marketer, you're still fucked. Doesn't matter what the product is. If you can't make it amplify, you're still fucked. And marketing's not that simple anymore because it's so damn competitive.
I would give myself a 50-50 chance at best of succeeding in an e-com startup today. And well, I know that there's going to be some fucking guy come along who's more like a Mark, or even better than Mark, younger than Mark, that's AI fucking guru that is efficiencies, man. The risks are out of control. Mark, what you want to say?
I was just going to say, I've got an e-com business that I started back in 2018, and it's still going well, touch wood. I don't know how great my prospects of growth are. I've tried everything, and I don't know if I can grow much more than what it is. But I started a second e-commerce brand, as you guys know, and I've had experience in the e-commerce space, and it's on life support. It's probably almost about to take its last breath, and that business has cost me $450,000 Aussie that I'm never going to see again. So
now, what if you'd put that into Bitcoin, or what if you'd put that into something else, right?
If I had to put that into Bitcoin at around about the same time that I started this business, it might be worth about 1.2 mil.
Mm. Speaking of AI,
and you would have done what? Nothing. Just literally sat on your ass and done nothing.
Speaking of AI, you just reminded me of an article I read this week. I don't know if you guys have seen it or not, that Zuckerberg and Meta lured the top AI guy from Apple and paid him $200 million to come over. Now, I don't know how long that's for, but literally $200 million USD is what the package is. And they basically stole them from Apple. So you go, what's AI worth? Well, obviously Zuckerberg is seeing something, and now he's heading up to what they're calling the super intelligence lab. And why are they doing that? Do you think they're doing that because it's going to help them hire more people? Do we really think that?
No,
right. Like this is the reality here, and this is where I don't know where it's going, because I love the people that say yeah, right, yeah, but it's like the internet, right? It'll just you'll employ more people, and AI, it'll be the same thing. You need people to run the AI and the systems, and like this in my eyes is different. Like this is literally will be replacing people, right? And then what happens is, right, guys like us that get educated and reread some articles like the one I read, going, oh, this is interesting. Widespread layoffs, restructuring, and automation. Oh, that's interesting, right? And what, meanwhile, everyone else is fighting over the front page newspaper of what's going on, like the pronouns and what flags they're standing in behind and all this rubbish, right? Eventually, what's going to happen is these types of people are going to get the letters as well. So in my opinion, anyone that's in a role that is at risk, right, with AI, you got to really start thinking about your future and what you're going to do. Because if you're that high income earner in a business, right, you're going to be cut at the knees. You'll be the first one, right? You're on the $500,000 package. You will be the first one that they will cut.
If he's prepared to spend $200 million on
one guy,
Zuckerberg's no dummy. He's doing that because he knows he can save $1 billion, right, with what this one guy's going to do. And this is why I think a lot of people, and like this Freedom Summit coming up, they're starting to realize I need to maybe restructure my life. Like, I've simplified my life massively. Like, sitting with millions of dollars in my principal place of residence is dumb, you know? Paying 40% of my income in tax is dumb for me.
You know, it's funny, Adam, you say that. And I'm like, people, like, we're building a beautiful home at the moment that we're moving into, right? And the reason why we're moving into is because capital gains, all right?
Right.
But people are like, oh, that's so amazing. You should be so, you're going to love it. This is going to be for your forever home. I'm already thinking in my head, like, I can't wait to sell it because I already know where I'm going to be placing money. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, in my mind, I'm already kind of like, I'll enjoy it for a little bit. And then I'm like, bang, you know? It's just the way people think though, right, Mark? Like, it's so emotional.
I'll tell you what it is, man. I'll tell you what it is. It's each time you've got a fucking new invoice to pay a plumber or a tradie, and then you're seeing Bitcoin go up and you're thinking, fuck.
I listened to a guy. I forget his name. Follow him on Instagram. He's originally from the Gold Coast, lives in Dubai. He's made a shit ton of money developing games. He's a Fijian guy, right? Shaved head, fit as, you know, good looking dude. And he's just, you know, I follow him and his journey, and he's very, very smart, big into Bitcoin. And he posted something yesterday and he's like, I get pitched all the time business ideas, right? I'm talking like really good business ideas, tech, you know, science, all types of things. And I don't invest in them, right? Now, don't get me wrong. This guy's already, you know, got hundreds of millions because he's sold these businesses. And he's like, when I work it out and if I can put that money in Bitcoin, that's all he says, right? He goes, I can't make the same return. Like, you know, over the last 10, and this is what he tells me. He goes, people get pissed off at me when I'm sitting down, when they're pitching me this idea. And I'm like, no, it's not good enough. And they're like, what do you mean? Like, this is the best thing since sliced bread. No, but the thing is, he has the money to start with, right? So in my opinion, right, people that are listening to this, and I want to get your guys' thoughts on this, yeah, right? Great. Let me throw a spanner in the works. All good, Adam, you've made your money already, right? You've got enough to put in Bitcoin that you can go, okay, yeah, and then do that. Eric, same thing. James, same. Mark, same thing. So if you're a person right now, right, that is literally on 100 grand a year trying to make ends meet, right? What do you do? Like, this isn't, again, financial advice, but if you were in that position, right?
I'll give you life advice.
Yeah. What would you?
Before everyone can go, I just think, because they've got varying degrees of it, as the spreadsheet that I told you guys about, I've got it to a point where a little private combo.
I think people will pay for that spreadsheet, by the way, in the comments in the last pod.
And it's fuck, I tell you what, there's a lot to be said for grabbing a pad and a pen and a compound calculator and just fucking keeping it super, super simple. So, I mean, that's where I'm going with it.
100%.
I'm not saying what to put it into, but if you get the theme of what's going on just right now, you've got Eric talking about a gazillion years saying, I don't even fuck how good it is. Nothing beats this, that, and a compound calculator. I'll end it out. Okay, let's say you're $100 grand a year and you got $800 a week spare cash flow over $100 a week, $100 a week, $100 a week, $100 a week, $100 a week. And that would be me.
Into something else that you have the conviction in, right? Like, research it, educate yourself around it, but you need to have the conviction around it. Like, for me, from the first day that I put money into the property that I'm building at the moment, right, to today, or not today, to when it's going to be finished, I'm not even going to do the calculation because it'll upset me, right? If I were to just put that into Bitcoin with zero work, right? With zero work. No, I shouldn't say zero work. There's education work, but different for the amount of effort that I put into this from the time I've signed a contract.
He's getting orange peeled, Adam.
Right? Yeah, right, to getting the keys.
Every episode, if I did, more I'm orange peeled.
Right, yeah. I'm not even going to do the calculation because I can see it more and more clearly now for me. Like, I bought more yesterday. As an example, I bought more Bitcoin yesterday. Fucking thing went down today. I'm like, yeah, this is how I roll. That's what happens, right? But the guy, one thing the guy said, right? And I'm literally looking at doing this, right? Dollar cost averaging. Right. I don't care however much you earn, okay? In my opinion, from what I've learned and from my experience in investing in Bitcoin specifically, I've been investing in chunks. I just go, yeah, boom, I'm going to buy a chunk. Okay, I'm going to buy a chunk. But I think a very good strategy, in my opinion, is that dollar cost averaging, right? Which is just, if you can afford $5 a day, it's $5 a day. If it's $100 a day, it's $100 a day. If it's $1,000, it's $1,000. And Tony, who is on the pod, does this as well, right? He just has an automated deposit that obviously deposits, takes money, withdraws money out of his business account, buys X amount of Bitcoin, and it just sits there. And that's something I personally will be implementing moving forward. Whether that's you guys agree to that or not, that's kind of because you're averaging, right? Like it's, you're buying high one day, low one day. Like yesterday, I bought a little chunk and I'm like, I shouldn't have done that. You know, 2 hours later, I'm reading this guy's post. God, I'm like, shit.
And it's funny that whenever you buy make an investment, it goes down, you just think, it fucking only happened to me. It happens every time, only I do it. And the rest of the world's doing the same fucking thing. And you sit there and go, come on, go up.
Mark, did you have something you were going to say there?
Yeah, I've thought about this so much, right? Because I think I'm living it, I'm in it. And you know, I've even started a channel where I'm trying to kind of work out how to voice it, right? And if this is, my advice is for people with no money, but this is life advice, for not financial advice. Go and speak to your financial planner or your, don't even bother. Look it up on ChatGPT, you get better luck. But like seriously, the rules of the game are changing. And my life advice for people with no money would be, like, now more than ever, with the uncertainty that we're moving into and the changing world that we're moving into, I agree with Adam. It's probably one of the easiest and one of the worst times ever to start a business because everything is getting disrupted so quickly. And if you're not going to go out there and spend hours learning how to trade options like I do, what I would basically suggest is stay in your current job, whatever it is, stay there. Try and take as much of the disposable income that you can and invest it in a basket of assets that are going to perform well over the next 5 to 10 years based on the changes that are occurring in the world at the moment that we come on and speak about every single week, and that all the podcasters, every single podcaster basically comes on and touches on this same subject every single week. Plug these transcripts into ChatGPT. Spend a couple of months researching the end game of what's happening because it's so clear. And you've got to do that first. And then build your own basket of assets that you think are going to do well over this 5 to 10 year time frame. And like Eric said, dollar cost averaging. And, you know, I'll give you a hint. It could be Bitcoin. It could be gold. It could be energy. We've spoken about energy going up and the shortage of energy. It'll be select stocks that are going to benefit from the world that we're moving into. And then I would add one more thing. If you're sitting at home saying, but every spare dollar that I've got already goes into my rent and my groceries, I would say, great. More than likely, you're not going to have the job that that pays your groceries and pays your rent at the moment. So quick, smart, jump online, do some research, use AI and work out how to sack yourself using AI. So how to sack yourself. So the job that you're doing and you're spending 38 hours a week doing, learn how to do that using AI in 5 hours a week and go out there and find 3 to 5 clients that are running a small business that wouldn't want to hire someone 38 hours a week like they're hiring you, and that would rather hire someone for 15 hours a week. It takes you 5, you charge for 15, and you make the difference. That is what I would do. You're about to get disrupted, so you better learn how to disrupt yourself.
We're doing it with the pod, you know, like I've said to the guys, let's get our transcripts and let's try and use AI to help us speed up the process of real creation and all this sort of stuff. A good I think, resource for people. A is Mark. So Mark's channel is Money Markets Mayhem, where he's actually – where they sign up for the challenge, Mark, to get these alerts?
Yeah, we can throw it up, but it's basically www.markdipaola, so markdipaola.com.au/newsletter/sub.
Yeah, so go there and get on Mark's list because he's actually showing you the trades that he's making. And, you know, like he's up 48% in the first couple of weeks of just – and he's showing you what he's doing. Like, that's a good resource. Another one is 4 days of trading, 48% gain. Hello. Like, that's just not a little bit better than the S&P. It's a lot. The other one is James at Invest Answers is a YouTube channel, Invest Answers. He basically invests exactly how Mark just described in making bets in things that are future paced. We got to finish the pod, but I want to share just a quick story with you guys because it relates to all of this. One of the smartest things I ever did was not get into real estate development. And so when I was making a lot of money a few years ago, I knew that land was land and real estate in Burleigh. I was really bullish about Burleigh, and I had like $1.5 million of cash that I needed to park. And so I bought a commercial piece of land in Burleigh, one of the last pieces of vacant land in Burleigh. And I was like, I'm going to build some warehouses, right? But then I sat down and did exactly what James said one day. I just bought it for cash. And then it was sitting there for months. And, you know, agents started offering me income to rent the land as hard stand and different things. And then I started going down the path of becoming a developer. And I'm not a developer. And then I just sat there and my gut was just saying, this is not sitting with me. So I sat there and I did the numbers on how long it would take to get approvals to build it. And then I'd have to sell it in a market 18 months from now. And then what money I wasn't making on the 1.5 million by not, if I had 1.5 million in an occupied building that was not sexy, but it had income, I would lose all that income that I would, because it's land. And I just sat down and did the math. And I realized that my dreams of being a developer were just misguided. What I was better off doing is finding a building that was already tenanted, that was maybe under-tenanted, that I could improve the rent on. And then I went around the corner and I bought 63 Township and I paid $1.95 million for it. I sold the land. I got enough to buy the building around the corner. It had income from day one. I upped all the rents and then I sold that building last year for $5 million. So, but that actually triggered me into going into and discovering rent arbitrage. And I went on that whole journey and made a lot of money from commercial as a result. The analogy here today, though, is that you must be flexible. You must be able to sit down like James has done with a spreadsheet. And I know how James's brains work. And he's now like, why the fuck would I start a business when I can align with these really smart individuals? Because there are people out there that do this and on a performance basis and help you and you can learn. But the people are so addicted to the struggle that they have to have this thing where it's my home and it's my business. And I'm like, once you lose the attachment to that, like I don't own a home. My goal is to own nothing. I don't want to own a car. I don't want to own a home. I don't want to live in the most tax-friendly place. And you know what happens? I can breathe. I'm like, oh, holy shit. Once you let go of that ownership idea, I can pick up and move somewhere in my suitcase and go rent. Now, I know it's not suitable for everyone, but I'm just talking about this principle of what is that emotional attachment costing you and why do you have it, right? Because a lot of us have it because of this ideology that somehow crept into our psychology that we have to own all this shit. If I want to get a fancy car now, I'll just go rent one for a day, or for a boat, I'll go rent one. It's way cheaper and way better. So just challenge what your beliefs are, really dig into why you think how you think. And for those of you that are homeowners, I coached a bunch of people and I'm like, they've got $2 million in their home, but they've got no assets outside of it. And they're like, how do I create wealth? I'm like, sell your home and put the money to work. And they're like, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. And I'm like, well, stay broke. Have fun. Enjoy that. You've got 10 years of retirement. You're fucked, right? Like, you've got nothing to do.
Cardone did a comparison that came out, I think it was this morning, Margo and whatever her name was, and just said renting, investing, owning home, and the outcome was about $7 million difference. And he said, and just left it there.
Worst thing I ever did was, from a financial point of view, was sinking $5 million into my principal place. Dumb move.
What I think one thing that I've learned since doing this podcast and since hanging out with you guys, and one thing that I'm getting better at now, but I need to get even better at, is allocating time, more time to just research. Like one thing that I don't know with you three, right, is you guys sit there and block and you read and research and during the day, right? Like that's, I'm still, you know, battling with the old school mindset of, man, like from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., like that's work time, right? Not research time. How do you get, like on some of the chats, I mean, back and forth, he goes, oh, check this spreadsheet. Oh, I've been working on this. I'm going, man, these guys are actually doing deep research throughout the day, right? That's, but in my mind, right, it's kind of, again, it's that ideology of like, that's not work. You know what I mean? Like work is like, yeah. Like is putting out fires. Work is running through your task list. Work is being on hold with Telstra. Work is being on hold with the insurance company. Work, you know what I mean? Like these types, I said that on purpose because James has a lot of experience on that over the last week. But that's the ideology that we all have. Work, 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 do things. Meanwhile, the researching and the deep thought, right? Like is so important. That's one thing that I've learned and one thing that I am adopting more and more because of you guys. You guys don't even realize this, but because of you guys, I'm now being a lot more curious on going, is real estate development the most effective thing I could be doing right now? Like Mark's going like, I'm interested in what you guys are doing, you and James, and I'd love to know the numbers and break that down with you because, and I'm like, yes, I will, because I want you to break down your numbers with me and then we'll go, who wins, right? Mm-hmm. And this isn't a battle of I'm better than you. It's like, what's the smarter move? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or that level of de-risking. And
I want to know if I'm getting back involved in
correct. And then you marry it together. Is there a combination of both? Is there a happy meeting where one provides chunks?
But what I can get from what I want to tell all you guys is what I got from this is one is I need to be doing more deep research and literally off the phone, block out time and go to invest in like the amount of pods these guys listen, the amount of, I can't even keep up in the chats. And that's when I'm like, I'm not spending enough time on this. That's when I realize I'm going, holy shit, these guys are outpacing me massively in the education space.
I did a whole podcast on this that'll be released on Saturday. And it's basically, I saw this article that the MIT did. They surveyed 54 people and they basically showed through writing essays how ChatGPT and language learning models are making you dumber. But I did a whole episode on, like we spoke about last week, on how I use ChatGPT and how I'm doing deep research, because this is the whole game. When your job has been taken away from you or your development work has been taken away from you because the numbers just don't stack up anymore, your ability to do the deep research and then to make bets based on that deep research is going to be everything. And you're only going to do it if you find enough meaning in needing to do it. That's the problem that we're going to have in 10 years. The problem we're going to have is we're all going to be getting like welfare checks or something coming in. We're not going to have to work. And then the question is going to be, do we have enough motivation to go out there and find meaning to do the deep research? Is there something we're passionate enough about to do deep research on? Because if we're not.
No, like, but the thing is you need to do, like I own a lot of property, right? And like it scares the shit out of me to think, all right, let's go sell 50% of it. I'm at a stage where it scares the shit out of me because I'm like, yeah, but what if that goes up by X? But now that I'm starting to educate myself a lot more on different things and seeing some of these returns and that's what starts to go, oh, you know what? And that doesn't include all the phone calls and the bullshit that you deal with along the way of owning property. Like it's always something happening. There's always a bill. There's always you know, cam scanner, you know, the bill to the bookkeeper and then the bookkeeper, you know, every month asking you reconciliation questions and then the property manager and then the consultants and all these different things that come with being in that space, right? And then there's another part of me that's like, yeah, but if you just put it into these other things, you just become complacent. Does that make you more stupid? You know what I mean? Like this battle of, because that is the story that we're all battling, right? Like, not like but, not but having it will, your
make,
own.
It will make a lot of people stupid if they don't then go out there and find meaning like Adam is doing. Find meaning, like, you know what I mean?
And you got to be loyal. Go, James.
I was going to say that MOT study, we've sort of alluded to that to about 3 or 4 podcasts ago as well. And I've read into that. I think it's also one of those ones where, yeah, it can either make you stupid if you're just completely reliant on it. As you said, Mark, yeah, I'm going to use it for this, but to expedite my outcome and not just use it to become a dumbass where you just copy paste, and not think about anything. Mm-hmm. It's to really condense the time frame to expedite your intelligence or your understanding of something, and then actually the next big thing is to put it in action and take that bet, which is the hardest thing. Sometimes just pushing the button.
The hardest thing is pushing the button and executing and like prioritizing, because I've seen it just like, yeah, just actually making the investment, pulling the trigger, putting the funds in. And that's the one thing I'm really dogged about. Like most of my day is just allocating the capital, like trying to get money onboarded into different things. It's not easy. Like Eric's been going for weeks and weeks trying to get a Bitcoin wallet sorted for the company. And it's tedious and it's slow, but
it's a red light task for me.
Yeah, yeah. So it's important, but it gets pushed to the bottom of the list probably as well, like all of us. But it's, guys, it is really important that you stay flexible and stay curious and be prepared to do those hard numbers and accept the fact that, you know, there may be, like I got pitched this week by a friend who's an early investor in this company that's got this amazing story, and they're going to IPO and they're going to exit and watch this webinar and da-da-da, and like, you get in now and they're going to IPO in billions and, you know, blah, 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 and you get all caught up in that. No, said Jamara, I'll put 100 grand. And then the next day I rang him and I went, you know what, mate? I'm not going to do it. He goes, why? I said, because I'm just going to buy Bitcoin. And he's like, oh. I said, because, bro, there's so much counterparty risk with this. I don't know. I'm excited because you're excited. I like you. I like the story. It's got some huge names around it, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, but, bro, like, the IPO might crash. The IPO might not happen. It might get, you know, there might be some disruption I don't know about. Like, I'm just going to shut the fuck up and just buy Bitcoin. And just because I look at Bitcoin, I go, it's 2 trillion in a 1,000 trillion asset class. It's the best performing asset in the 1,000 trillion mix. And it's still only 2 trillion. Like, that's it. That's the business case for me from a value point of view, right? Like,
and best thing, what did you say about Bitcoin? And go, did you ever hear him coming in Enron or
can he repeat just that one more time just so people can understand what you just said? Because I know we got to finish this pod. I know we got to finish this pod because of the summit, but repeat that.
I was at dinner last night. Somebody asked me this question here in Limassol, overlooking Cyprus, right? He goes, dude, how have you got this much conviction? And I said, bro, there's $1,000 trillion of assets on planet Earth. Bitcoin represents $2 trillion of assets. It's the smallest slice of the pie, but it is the best performing asset in the world, bar none. Period, full stop. It is finite and it's currently less than 0.02% of global assets. So if you've got all this money, you do the math, like, and you can't print more of it. And so I'm like, if you've got the best performing asset in the world, it's just a matter of time before money is going to go there. And if there's a finite supply, that's it. I said, at the end of the day, when you're in business, you are making a bet. You're going to bet that Meta does this. You're going to bet the real estate market holds up while you boys do your development, or you bet this, you bet that. What better bet is there than the fundamental mechanism that we save human life in, which is money, that's so fucking broken and destroying lives? What better bet is there that people want to solve that? And the solution is there, and the numbers are there, and BlackRock is now there, and governments are there. Like, it's all coalescing around this is going to happen. And so that's the bet I keep making. And a guy texted me this morning, says, I don't get Bitcoin. How do you get rich off Bitcoin? I said, oh my God, fuck me, dude.
I think the thing is here is, and the thing that brains you is, there's actually no work to do other than the work to understand it. And then when you understand it, zero to do.
That's right.
Like, there's zero to do. But the work is understanding.
Well, you do got to press a couple buttons on the laptop and the transfer button.
Open an account. Go to the fucking pony.
But there's all this stuff. There's all this personal development stuff that comes up. But, you know, poor people are just so rich to so used to slugging it out and taking risk and losing that they're just not used to front running anything.
And and most people are fucking ADHD. That's what I've discovered, that I'm ADHD. So,
100%. You know,
I'm changing my investment I'm setting up a bunch of different portfolios so that I've got some that I just don't touch, 80% that I just keep adding to my convictions. And then I'm taking, you know, 10% of my wealth and I'm putting it in my ADHD portfolio so I can just thrash it around
and
be busy every day.
I mean, I was with Tony and I'm like, yeah, I look at Tony and he's like, well, Tony from the Bitcoin Way. And he's like, bro, like once you become properly self-sovereign and like a guy said to me, you know, don't you worry about like money in the banks in Cyprus? I'm like, why the fuck would I worry about a bank? Who's keeping money that's got any brains? Like, why? Like, why does a bank matter? Like, you know, like when you...
Because majority of people have their cash just sitting in a bank account in their mind, it's the safest place. The worst investment
in the world is cash. Why would want cash?
They need to stop thinking about money as safety or security or anything else. You need to start thinking as optionality. You need to start thinking about your cash as optionality, and it's only good for that.
Rich people do not store their money, their wealth in cash.
I was about halfway through on a Saturday when I was going for a drive. The speech he did at Bitcoin Prague, and he tells his story about the confiscation of his cash. If that doesn't fucking wake you up, I don't know what will. We don't get cash confiscated. We just get it taken from us every week
in a
different format.
Yeah, people, like I said, people at the start of this pod, people go, oh, didn't, Cyprus get a 40% haircut in the bank? I said, don't you get a 40% haircut every fucking year?
Week?
Do you say
every week?
Every week, 40% of your time is stolen from you through taxation. And you're laughing at people who live in tax havens have got a haircut once.
But that's the tall poppy. That's the tall poppy syndrome, right? It's also a mindset.
So, you know, like I say to people, like, I don't worry about the strength of banks because I don't bank in banks. You know, like if you look in my savings account, like there's 20 grand, like I don't keep any money in a bank account. So anyway, it's just a new way of thinking. And it's really starting to just really ask those first, you know, and I do some Bitcoin treasury investing and I'm curious, like super curious about what Mark's doing. And I'm guilty of like, I texted Mark, said, Mark, can I pay you $1,000 an hour just to show me how to buy an option? He said, yeah, okay, I'll do it for $1,000 an hour. Cool. Because I don't want him to teach me for free, but I still actually haven't done it because I've been busy doing other shit, organizing freedom summits. And then I look at it and I go, fuck, you made 48% the last 2 weeks.
Oh, you know what? Let's do that on a Zoom call, right? Because he has got to do it once and we'll each pay him $333. Let's be efficient.
Inflation, bro. Yeah, 100%. And then, 100%. And then I'll put it on a Mark sales page, a landing page, and probably fucking arbitrage Mark's intelligence. I mean,
I'll charge him double.
I'm already trying to think how we can monetize James's spreadsheet.
I think that's the first C bomb. I'll trade you the spreadsheet for the strategy, Mark. It's cool.
I know you guys can afford it. So Adam got the founder's price. You guys are $2,000 a pop.
Yeah, that's right. But guys, just, you know, like what Eric's saying there is so true. Just ask yourself that question of like, am I programmed for hard mode? And how much time am I allocating to, you know, that being, and how open am I? Like last month, I told them I'm doing this trading strategy I'm going to reveal on the Freedom Summit, right? And they're like, oh yeah, cool. Keep me posted about that. And I'm like, okay, I won't, but okay. I told you and I'm not going to fucking tell you twice. Right. And I told him that at the time, I'm only going to tell you this once because I don't want to push you. You know, I'm not going to chase you. This is what I'm doing. But that came about because one of my followers on Instagram DM'd me and he had a photo and it was the unemployable pod on his boat, playing on his boat. And his boat was like a 90 footer in Sydney Harbour with a Sydney Harbour bridge and everything in the background. And I'm like, fuck, bro. Like, why are you listening to our pod? You've clearly got some cash, right? Very humble guy, right, from New South Wales. He said, mate, I love you guys, love the pod, get so much out of it. And, of course, I'm curious, like, what do you do? Like, maybe you should come on the pod, tell your story. He's super low-key private guy. And I said, well, how do you make money? He goes, well, I do this thing. One of the things I do is trading, right, but I've made my money through plumbing or a trades business, got heaps of employees, massive business. And I just said, well, tell me about that. And he's like, oh, boom, boom, boom. He introduced me to the trading company in Dubai, and I went and did it. Now, a few days ago, a couple of my mates checked back in. Adam, how's that trading thing going? I said, oh, you know, did all right. And they're like, what did you do? I said, well, last month I made 16 grand for doing nothing. And they're like, $4,000 a week. I'm like, yep. And how much money do you have in? I said, $100,000. I said, hang on, you put in $100,000, you're making $4,000 a week completely passive. I said, yep. They're like, motherfucker, what have I been doing? You've been doing your GST returns and fucking all the shit of administrating a fucked deal, which is your small business, instead of fucking listening. And I'm not going to tell you again. You enjoy your slavery.
Yeah.
And I'm going to enjoy just watching YouTube videos and making decisions.
James, I got a question.
I'm going to beat you.
I got one question, James.
Just a quick one before you do, Eric. I just want to say, like, every single week we come on here and we kind of say these things, but if you watch carefully, you'll notice that each and every one of us takes what the other person's saying to heart. Like, we hear what Adam's saying, I hear what Eric's saying, I hear what James is saying, and I take it to heart, and then I go away and I really try and fucking implement that in the most effective way possible. If you're watching at home and it's kind of passing the time, and you've got to go back and watch these pods again and really take them to heart and then do the self-analysis, because that's why, you know, I think we're progressing is because we have these hard conversations. This is like a mastermind that we have with each other every week, and we do it in front of all you guys as well. So we can't hide from anything that we're saying. We record the shit, and so we can't hide from it. It's like this high-level mastermind, and I don't know, if you could just take it to heart, build your own little group of four and do the same thing, even if you're not recording it, you just gotta.
Put it in a WhatsApp group. Eric, I'm going to go to you in a sec, but I just want to tell you, just be like my friend Jason. So Jason's one of my best mates. You guys all know him. And he just said, Adam, the biggest fucking mistake I ever made in my life is not listening to you 30 years ago. If I'd just fucking done what you told me to do, I'd be in a different position. And he said, all right. He goes, Adam, just tell me what to do now and I'm going to do it. And so I said, all right, go and do this trading thing with me. He goes, done. So he puts his $15,000 in because he didn't want to put the whole $100,000 in. I told him not to. I said, just put a little bit in. Goes in, first month, $3,000 or something like that, right, that he made profit straight to his bank. And I'm like, he goes, motherfucker, this is the best. How does it feel? He goes, Adam, it just feels amazing. Like, this is the first forward step I've had in so long. I've just made $3,000 just by fucking listening and doing it. And I go, good, now let's continue. And now I'm introducing him to different things that I'm doing. And I'm basically, he's putting his money with mine wherever I'm doing it. That's what you need, man. Like, you just need to action it. Eric, before we just close up.
James, question for you. After this discussion, should we settle on Friday? I know there's a deposit that got put down, but
this is another key. If you're gonna do business, do it with other people's money. We got no money in the deal, Eric. I don't even fuck what we do on Friday, mate. You're in the chair.
Jesus, hardcore James. Talking about two cheeks of the same asshole.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, in other words, your call, brother. You got the ball.
You got the ball. No, it's a good deal. That money will go straight over the other side of the ledger. As soon as it gets wrapped up.
But honestly, guys, Eric, like it's
Eric. Like, sorry to interrupt, but I know you're just joking around, and you're not going to walk away from the deal, right? Because there's money to be made. But in all honesty, right? You're about to make money on this deal, and there's going to be tax incentives and depreciation and all different ways that you can structure the gains. Seriously, then taking that and saying, well, because you said before you're shit scared about selling property, but if you now look at it and say, well, I've just taken on this deal, which at end's value is going to mean my property portfolio is going to increase by X amount. Well, I can afford to sell these older properties that have already had their depreciation. And maybe now that gives you permission to sell one of those older properties and feel better about this new deal. You know what I mean?
Yep, correct. Yeah.
Or lever up the property and grab a whole bunch out and chuck it over here. Now you got both.
The key is
not already levered up. Yeah.
I have options. You guys have options. And what you want is to be living in a life where you have options. Mm-hmm. That is the key to get there.
Yep.
Spend an hour, 2 hours a day, not just listening to a pod while you're cooking your spaghetti and the kids are in the background and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. Listen to a pod, pen and paper, ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a very good friend right now that I've been talking to for the last couple of years about this stuff. And, you know, he's not a business guy. He's not an entrepreneur. But now, right, they're setting up their self-managed superannuation fund. They're doing, he goes, man, I used to just watch Footy all the time. Now I'm watching Mark's pod. I'm watching your pod. I'm watching, he's sending me pods now. He's educating me. Hey, have you heard of this? Have you heard of that? I love every minute of it. And he goes, you know what I'm doing as well? I got ChatGPT open and I'm asking it the questions. And I'm like, mate, like you've turned like 360 degrees. Like this is unbelievable, right? And that is the key, right? Is not just listening. It's listening. It's documenting. It's challenging. It's asking yourself questions back, being introduced to people, right? I've introduced them 3-4 people. Bang, 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 bang. Meeting, 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 meeting. And things are happening. And that's what you guys need to do to have options, right? Amen. I'm in a grateful place to go, yeah, I've got options. I can sell this one and take this one and buy that one. And I know a lot of you guys aren't in those positions. Adam has options, Mark, James. Yeah. But the key is get yourself in a position where you have options. The scarcity comes from having no option.
And also, not only that, it's being self-led. I mean, we've all said ChatGPT from the very beginning. Then Adam's dropped Whisperflow in there. Like Emma, she's never fucking using the computer, right? And I just sent to her every time I set her computer up in a bar, Whisperflow, ChatGPT, a spreadsheet with all the logins, a compound interest calculator, a YouTube channel and just save them all there. Every time she texts me and asks me something now, I just go, one button, function, talk, work it out yourself. I'm not your Google. I said it pretty abruptly. Go to Whisperflow and fucking type into ChatGPT the exact question you want to know. Let go and watch it do its thing. And you tell me what the answer is. And it's a little bit of tough love, but now she's now interested, now wants to know more. We're setting all this same strategy up in her self-management fund, which has been presented 7% per annum for the last fucking 30 years. Take a small chunk, buy a little Bitcoin, lend against it just quietly because you're not lending against self-management, but you can some other way. And then buy, some fucking meta strategy, a micro strategy shares, and do it with a little amount of debt. I'm not doing it for you. You do it. You need to own it. I light up when a new article comes out. So it's all about, you've got to actually be invested in yourself and also do it yourself.
Yeah. I mean, and do what Mark said, guys, you know, like, Mark's said, get in a chat group. That's really powerful. Just another example here, you know, like I've been saying MicroStrategy for so long, right? I just looked last 3 months, it's up 45%. Like, that's just the sit and do nothing strategy that I've told you guys about a million times. Going to close the pod off with a joke that I think you'll find funny that holds a powerful lesson for all people in Australia. I love this joke.
Is this a hunting one?
No, similar, but similar. Right. The same family, right? The guy goes to the doctor. He says, doctor, my butt is really, really sore. And the doctor says, well, you know, can you show me exactly where it's sore? And he says, it's right here at the entrance. And the doctor looks at him and says, son, for as long as you call that an entrance, it's going to be sore. If you keep calling it an entrance, maybe you've got to reconsider your paradigm for life and go, actually, maybe it's not meant to be used for that. And I need to make some changes in my life. Start pushing shit the other way. It'll, get involved. Get involved.
It's a perfect analogy.
All right, guys.
That's an analogy.
Like and subscribe.
Eric took it out nicely.
Thank you for following the pod.
We're crazy, man. We're crazy.
We'll see who watches to the end anyway.
Adam's going to make sure when he does his spiel, watch right till the end.
Oh, yeah, the best joke. All right, thank you guys on stage, guys. Thank you for watching. See you next time on Unemployable. Bye for now.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.